Welcome to Populist. I'm Steve Hafer. With me is Kirk Trudner.
Hey, everybody. And Steve, that was a very good John Oliver you just did.
Uh-oh. I kind of did do that, didn't I?
A little bit.
Didn't mean to, but hey, it is a good intro. I like John Oliver, and I hope people like us.
So, if we're going to borrow, you borrow from the best.
That's right. So I guess it would be safe to say we've kind of been looking forward to this. It's the very first episode of Populist, The Maiden Voyage.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, John Oliver II. For those of you listening for the first time, which I guess probably would be all of you.
Yeah.
Kirk lives in the greater Los Angeles area. Go Dodgers, right, Kirk?
Oh, yeah.
And I did for about 30 years, but now I live in the Portland metropolitan area. And so we are being...
Go Blazers.
No way. And
now that we've just alienated our core audiences, have a good night, everybody.
So Populist is a top 10 list show where we will feature a new topic every episode with a wide variety of interests. We'll also have a special guest come here and give their list. And we'll also reveal the results from the listeners poll, which you guys all vote on if you go to our website, populistpodcast.net. Go there and vote on the new topic and the week before our new show airs, and we'll read the list. This being the first show, the list was a little puny this week.
Are you telling me or are you telling the audience?
I'm telling you. But if it shames the audience into going to vote, that's good, too.
That is great. You know, just to follow up on what you were saying, there's a lot of top 10 list kind of shows out there. But what Steve and I are doing with it is a little bit different. It brings in a bunch of different points of view on a single topic. And we think you're going to find the results interesting. We're having a lot of fun doing the show, and we hope you guys enjoy it.
And we are excited about doing this one. It is episode one, topic number one, which is best baseball films of all time. I love this topic.
Ooh, this is a good one. We have gone back and forth on these for years. So Steve and I might have a sense of what each other is going to say, but I think we have some fun in store too.
We always have fun. Well, here we go. What do you say? Should we do it?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's start off with you, Kirk, on your number 10.
10.
So my number 10 was released in the year 2011, stars Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, and it is Moneyball. It is really a great example of looking under the hood at baseball. This is where the birth of analytics happened with the Oakland A's and Billy Beane back in the early part of the century. It is a great look at how this new system wants to overtake the old system. It's faith versus science. It's numbers versus the scout's eyes and intuition. It's objective versus subjective. It's a great look at all of this. And like a baseball game too, you can enjoy it on a very surface level, just some of the performances, the Aaron Sorkin script. But if you really want to jump in and analyze it like a baseball game, you there's just so much more to this movie. I love Moneyball. I think it's a great examination of the analytics revolution, and it is my number 10.
That's a good choice. I do like that movie a lot. We'll see if it made my list or not. But my number 10 is one that I don't think is going to make a lot of lists. I think it gets forgotten a lot, and it's called For the Love of the Game. It was a 1999 film directed by Sam Raimi, stars Kevin Costner and Kelly Preston. Also, Jenna Malone and John Reilly have pretty good parts in it. It's an interesting movie because it's split kind of in half. There is a romantic love story aspect about Kevin Costner and Kelly Preston's characters, how they've been dating for over 5 years and things have just fallen apart. She's going to move away and he's about to go and pitch what may be the last game of his life for the Detroit Tigers, who he's pitched with his whole life. And he's friends with the owner. The owner tells him before the game that he's going to be selling the team. And so he's going out to the mound and he's dealing with a lot of this stuff. What I like about it is they keep bouncing back and forth between those stories. And then sooner or later, you find out that in the middle of all this, we find out he's pitching a perfect game through the sixth inning. So the stakes of both things are being raised at the same time, his relationship and the game. And Vin Scully's in it, who I always love, one of the all-time great announcers, just doing the play-by-play, has lines like, the cathedral that is Yankee Stadium belongs to a chapel. And that's Costner's character's name, Billy Chapel. Just love those things. So anyway, I thought it's a very strong movie. It, for some reason, I just always start watching it if it's on.
Oh, for love of the game, you know, you can cut this out if you want, but I actually read for the John C. Reilly part.
Did you really?
I did. I was truly bummed to not even get to the next callback, because I love the script. I remember reading it when they gave it to us, and thought it would make a great baseball movie. And I think you're right. It did not make my list, but it was very, very close.
So I could have been sitting here saying, with my partner, you know him as Gus Ziske.
Kirk Turner. Exactly.
That's pretty awesome.
Exactly. What? I certainly have a better arm than John Reilly.
But he's great in that movie. I love him. Let's go to number nine.
Number nine, released in 1950. This is the Jackie Robinson story. Now, very easily, we could have put the movie 42 with Chadwick Boseman in this spot. The reason I went with the Jackie Robinson story is both films are incredibly similar. They look at the first year that Jackie Robinson spent with the in Montreal and then ultimately up with the Brooklyn Dodgers as well. The only reason it's not higher on my list is, to me, the Jackie Robinson story is a great story start to finish, starting at UCLA, where he was a star athlete, getting into the majors, all the work he did after. I mean, his career was a great story, but this only felt like the first chapter of a larger story. And I also thought it was very impressive that Jackie played himself in the film, and he was asked to recreate some really difficult moments he had to endure. And I thought that showed strength and character. It was a wonderful film. So was 42. If you take them combined, it really does give a nice illustration of that first year and the difficulties that Jackie Robinson had to endure. But I went with the Jackie Robinson story.
Very interesting choice. I think it's amazing to actually see Jackie himself portray everything that you were talking about, because, you know, that guy went through it, and I'm sure it, you know, what they did in the movie set doesn't come anywhere close to what he endured in real life, but I'm sure it brought up a lot of memories for him, and I'm sure he knew what he was feeling at the time better than anybody. So pretty interesting project. And you said you could have very well have taken 42 on this spot also, because you know what? I'm going to take as my number nine, the movie 42.
Really?
Strangely enough, with Chadwick Boseman playing Jackie Robinson, Harrison Ford playing the owner, Branch Rickey, Lucas Black playing Pee Wee Reese, all very good performances. Chadwick, I love in this movie. I just like him personally, and I'm very, very sad that he's no longer with us. He was one of the big rising stars in my book. The thing that I like him about in this movie is he captures the heart and the soul and the struggle and the pain that you think Jackie was going through. But dang it, he also looks like Jackie Robinson out on the baseball field, the way he runs and especially the way he slides. They have a great play at home plate where he has a close-up of him sliding. He's got the form down perfectly. He looks just like Jackie. So I totally buy him doing it. And then he and Harrison Ford together are great. I've never seen Branch Rickey in my life, so I don't know exactly how accurate Harrison Ford's portrayal was, but I'm sure it's pretty close. I know he had the gravelly voice and everything, and at the very least, he's very interesting, and I thought it was a good piece of casting. So 42 is my number nine.
Something tells me if you put horn-rimmed glasses and speak in a gravelly voice, you could be a baseball owner of any stripe from the 40s through the 60s.
Probably.
Number eight.
Eight.
My number eight is baseball's warm milk. It's a glass of warm milk. It is The Rookie, starring Dennis Quaid, Rachel Griffiths, directed by John Lee Hancock, who knows his way around sports films, heartwarming sports films. He also directed The Blind Side. This is every kid's dream.
So when you say it's a glass of warm milk, you mean it puts you to sleep?
No, it's very comforting. It goes down easy. It is something that just puts you in a good, warm, open mood. It is comfort food. There's two or three movies on the list that we can call comfort food, that I'll call comfort food. And The Rookie is one of them. It's the dream of every kid to make it to the majors. And when you pair it with will he, won't he, is he too old? The good guy goes, I mean, it's a perfect baseball movie for the kid and all of us. And the one thing that I've always taken away from, which is kind of funny, is they show Alex Rodriguez in the film as a Texas Ranger. But in 1999, he was actually a Seattle Mariner.
Yeah. Little foreshadowing going on there.
Exactly.
Before the trade happened. That's great. That's a good choice. It's a very good choice. In fact, I think it's so good that for my number eight, I also chose the rookie, strangely enough.
Swear to God, people, we did not set this up. And it's something we should mention, Steve, is we don't see each other's lists or talk about these lists beforehand. So all of those coincidental choices. Yeah.
We do all these lists on our own. This is the first time that we're hearing both sides as well. But Dennis Quaid is hard not to like. He just always brings a good edge and a good sincerity to his characters. I like it a lot. You really believe that he's worked with his high school team for a while, that they weren't very good at the beginning, but they listen to him. They get better. They like him a lot. He likes them. And then you believe him when he goes and gets his shot. You think that Quaid can actually throw a baseball. He stands on the mound correctly. He does all the things right that you're supposed to do. But what gets me about this movie the most is I'm a sucker for things of small town stories where he comes there as a kid and he doesn't want to be there, but he grows up in the town and he learns to love the town and he likes the people in them and they love him. And then when he does make it to the big leagues, they're all there supporting him. They even show up at his first game in Arlington, which he wasn't expecting. It's a great moment. And it just has that heart, that Americana.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
What's your number seven?
Seven.
Number seven is one of my favorite movies of all time, not just a baseball movie. On a grander, bigger list of favorite movies of all time, it would probably move up. But in terms of baseball movies, my number seven is Major League.
Wow.
Released in 1989 with Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen, Corbin Burnson, Margaret Whitten, James Gammon. I mean, Rene Russo. We always forget the Rene Russo's in this movie. Wesley Snipes. I mean, it was a great cast. Written by David Ward, who wrote The Sting back in 1972. So you know you're going to get a good story. You know you're going to get good dialogue. But what you really got was a comedy that was very broad, but it walked the fine line of becoming a cartoon. There weren't any kind of Bugs Bunny ball spinning moments in it. The baseball was real. The situations were real. A little bit exaggerated. I mean, you know, you've got a guy worshiping a voodoo doll in a locker room.
Wait. Doesn't everybody worship a voodoo doll in a locker room?
I've got Joe Boo in my closet right now. You know, little thing of whiskey. I'm fine for the day.
And actually, you know, I do have a Joe Boo on my bar. You gave it to me.
I did. Everybody has to have a Joe Boo. And I'm also going to go coloring outside the lines here. I'm partnering this with Major League 2.
Oh, cheater. Because
they're the exact same movie.
Cheat.
It's just part one, part two.
Cheat.
Yes. No, let's say asterisk friendly.
Okay.
And number two does have the Return of the Wild Thing scene, which is one of my favorites from both films.
That's true.
Anyway, Major League, it's a lot of fun. We quote lines from it all the time. If you're a baseball fan, you get it. You enjoy it. Again, it's highly improbable, but it's wholly enjoyable.
Yeah, entirely quotable movie. And I have a feeling we'll be hearing a little more about that a little later.
Yes.
For my number seven, I went on the antithesis of your choice. I went with an old baseball classic, one of the gems of the 1940s, The Black and White, The Pride of the Yankees, starring Gary Cooper. This is a movie that got me into the genre when I was a kid. I remember my dad watching it, and I just started watching the beginning just because it was an old film. I thought it was cool. And then I noticed, oh, this is a baseball player, and there's all this stuff, and whoa, who's that guy, Dad? Oh, that's Babe Ruth. Whoa, the real Babe Ruth? Yeah. It's like, wow, that's neat. So it just sucked me in, and Gary Cooper's just that guy. He's just that epitome of a leading man who can play strong, he can play aw shucks, he can play whatever. And Teresa Wright as his wife is fantastic, and I've seen her in dozens of old movies as well. Always been a fan of hers. Walter Brennan. It's a good cast, and it's a great story. And of course, it ends up with the sad moment where he finds out that he's got what later became known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And there's the iconic scene where he says his final goodbyes to Yankee Stadium from the pitcher's mound, talking on the mic to the whole crowd. Great moment. Great movie. That's my number seven.
Great choice. I mean, you said it's one of the most iconic scenes in not just baseball movies, but movies in general.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows that scene. You know, it's, it's Lou Gehrig. I mean, the guy was unbelievably talented. 17 years, Yankees, Murderer's Row. And I can understand what you're saying about watching it with your dad. You know, and you go, wait a minute, that's Babe Ruth?
Yeah.
That's like, kind of cool. That's like a living baseball card.
That was definitely a whoa moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can see where that would hold a place close to you. So good choice.
Thank you. Let's move to number six.
Six.
With number six, I stay on the comedy train and I reach back all the way to 1976 for the Walter Matthau, Tatum O'Neill classic. The
Bad News Bears. I knew you were going to do this to me.
Today's show is sponsored by Chico's Bail Bonds. you know, for a lot of people, I was my early teens when this movie came out. It was kind of like the American Pie or the Super Bad of our generation. It was kids behaving badly, and it was kind of given permission to behave badly. But the kids were great. They were mostly unknown. So whatever they brought, you know, it was unique to them and you appreciated them for it, whether it was Tanner, whether it was, you know, any of the kids. I mean, they were just absolutely terrific. I don't know if you could make the movie now, you know, with the political correctness that we have. And I can see why in a lot of ways you can certainly try. But as an example of that, I looked up the tagline from the film. And there is no way on earth you could do this tagline right now, which is the coach is waiting for his next beer. The pitcher is waiting for her first bra and the team is waiting for a miracle. Consider the possibilities. I guess in the bicentennial year of 1976, you could get away with that. Couldn't get away with it now, but it's a movie that holds up. It's still very funny. It's a great baseball movie, especially because the kids are involved. So I've got the Bad News Bears 1976 at number six.
That's a great choice. And that remake they did with Billy Bob Thornton, just not good. I like Billy Bob, but oh boy, should not have gone there.
You don't follow Walter Matthau.
Yeah. And besides, some older movies just don't need to be remade, folks. Yes, I'm speaking to you, the people who remade Arthur. Not good.
Yeah. Upcoming episode, bad movies that shouldn't be remade.
Yes.
Movies that shouldn't be remade. Yes,
exactly.
Let's take bad movies that had a good story and remake those. I'm looking at you, Wild Wild West. All right, what's your number six?
My number six is another movie about old-time baseball, but it's not an old movie. It was made much more recently in 1988, and it's the movie Eight Men Out, about the famous Black Sox scandal for the Chicago White Sox when they threw the World Series. Some of the main stars include David Strathairn, who I love as Eddie Seacott, Michael Rooker, for those of you who are fans of Days of Thunder or The Walking Dead, D.B. Sweeney, and then some bigger names like John Cusack and Charlie Sheen, John Mahoney, who you know is the dad from Frasier, as Kid Gleason, the manager of the White Sox, Christopher Lloyd, who was one of the main gamblers. And then John Sayles and Studs Terkel play the reporters who find out that the White Sox are indeed throwing the World Series. John Sayles, who plays Ring Lardner, is also the director and writer of this movie, so he's obviously a big force behind it. But I love it because it has a good old feel. It's almost like they shot it in sepia tone. It just feels like it's of the time. The uniforms were done perfectly. The mannerisms, the speech was very good. And a lot of the ball players seemed very believable when you did see the on-field stuff. And that's always a big selling point to me with baseball movies. But it's just well done. There's nothing that's the best about it, but I think it's just a good, solid, complete choice for a baseball film.
Eight Men Out was number 11 on my list.
Something has to be.
It just dropped off. We've talked about this before. I think it's a great movie. I do think it was a little superficial in the telling of a very complex story. I would love to have known the motivations of the individual guys as opposed to just the blanket, Comiskey screwed us, so we're going to throw the World Series. We got into that very quickly. But to all your other points, I think the feel of the movie was right. The tone of the movie was right. The athleticism of the actors, which you could actually talk about in all of these films. If you don't look like a ball player, it's really hard to sell a baseball movie.
Yes.
So I thought all of the actors really acquitted themselves very well on the field, as they do in most, if not all, of these movies. The only thing, and did the director miscast the actor who played Ring Lardner? Given that they were one and the same.
I think he had a long, hard look in the mirror and had that very same discussion with himself.
Yeah. Notes sessions would have been very interesting. I just thought Sayles is great. He's a great writer. He's a great director. I've loved him as an actor and other things. I just thought he was a little stiff in this.
Do you spend all of your waking moments watching reality TV? Well, you're in good company. I'm Will.
And I'm Marissa. And we're the hosts of Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails, a new weekly podcast that covers the ever so entertaining and cringy world of reality television.
Each week, we'll be raising our glasses and diving into the latest drama and chaos from our favorite reality TV shows.
From 90 Day Fiancé to The Bachelor, you've got all your reality favorites covered.
So grab a drink and join us as we clink our glasses to the hilarious and delightful train wrecks of reality TV.
Subscribe now to Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, but I think partially he was supposed to be. And then when you have him with Studs Terkel, who's very lively, man of the street, a little more jovial, I think they were a great pairing. And so they kind of balanced each other out.
Studs was great. I thought Studs brought a lot of life and fun to it. It was great.
Oh, yeah. He just seemed perfect for the time. I'm glad they cast him in the movie.
Yeah.
All right. Number five.
Number five is a movie that you've already mentioned, and that is the 42 classic Pride of the Yankees, starring Gary Cooper, Teresa Wright, Walter Brennan, all the people you'd already talked about. To me, this is the all-American film about the all-American game, about one of the most beloved players in history. You've got Gary Cooper. You've got Babe Ruth. Damon Runyon writes the foreword to the film. Samuel Goldwyn produces the movie. I mean, you're talking, you know, a murderer's row of filmmakers and talent that made this movie as well. It's a perfect 1940s film. It's a very happy story until you get, obviously, to the tragic news at the end of the film. Something I found out in doing a little research on it is this movie was released less than 2 years after Lou Gehrig's death.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
It was very quick. And there was a quote from Lou, and this is before Jackie Robinson. And the quote from Lou was, "There is no room in baseball for discrimination. It is our national pastime and a game for all." So you're talking about a guy who was unbelievably talented, unbelievably humble, unbelievable foresight. I mean, this is a guy that should get more recognition in today's game. You've got the Ted Williamses, the Babe Ruths, the Ty Cobbs, you know, the Christy Mathesons, the Walter Johnsons. Lou Gehrig ought to be in that conversation each and every time.
Absolutely.
And Pride of the Yankees was just a great documentation of this human being, this baseball player, and what he meant to the All-American game.
Yeah, I think the scope of, especially in Yankee lore, if not baseball lore, guys like Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle, they're very easy to put up on pedestals because they were kind of those folk heroes. And the guys like DiMaggio and especially Lou Gehrig get lost in the shuffle. Couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. I've already talked about the movie. It's just, it's a silver screen icon. It's a great, great film. My number five is something you've talked about already. Just recently, The Bad News Bears. Can't not have it on my list. It also was one of those very influential movies when I was a kid, as far as liking baseball movies. And it's a great movie to like. It's funny. It's all the things you described. The dynamics between Walter Matthau and Tatum O'Neill and Jackie Earl Haley are fantastic. And the rest of the team, all these characters, I don't think any of them did go on to do much, as you mentioned. But they were all fantastic in what they did. The characters very memorable. And then you had a couple big time actors in there also, like Vic Morrow, who was the manager of the evil Yankees team that played against the Bears, and Ben Piazza. And then little Brandon Cruz played Vic Morrow's son, the pitcher for the Yankees. And he was known back in the 70s as the star of the television series, The Courtship of Eddie's Father. So it was cool to see him, and he was very good in it. But great movie. I laugh every time I watch it still to this day. It holds up very well for me.
But you temper when you show it to your kids now.
I have to drag my kids to watch any movie that comes before 1995.
Yeah. You and I watching Animal House with your son, and he's looking at us like, so? And?
Well, I don't think we helped matters because we were preceding every joke by laughing 2 seconds before the joke actually happened. And I think that kind of killed it for him.
Yeah, that might have had something to do with it.
Let's move on. Let's go to number four.
Four.
All right. We're into the top part of the list now. My number four is a 1992 release directed by Penny Marshall called A League of Their Own, starring Tom Hanks, Gina Davis, Lori Petty. I mean, actually, I was looking at IMDb again, doing some research on this. The number of people in this is staggering. Familiar names is staggering, and familiar faces.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned David Strathern.
Yeah.
Earlier. He was in this. You've got everybody from Madonna to Rosie O'Donnell. You know, Gary Marshall has a bit role in this film. You know, it's a terrific movie. Again, it captures the period. It is a very well told story of a chapter in baseball. I don't know that a lot of us were familiar with. I consider myself a real baseball fan. And after coming out of that movie, that was a completely unknown part of baseball in America that I was now awakened to and wanted to find out more about. The players were good. You know, we've talked about the male baseball players in other movies. I thought the actresses in this film did an incredible job of playing baseball and looking like real ball players. You know, you 5 minutes in, you forgot that they were women playing ball and you just looked at them as players. I love the movie. The soundtrack again was terrific. It set the tone. It set the period. It was a very light touch. Again, walking that line between comedy and broad comedy in a baseball setting. And I really gave Tom Hanks a great deal of credit because here was a guy who was just coming off of Bonfire of the Vanities and was doing Sleepless in Seattle. So he could have really said, no, I need to be the star of this movie. And he was smart. He let the cast members all have their moments to shine. And in doing so, he looked good as well. So all in all, just a terrific baseball movie, piece of Americana, you know, one I can watch over and over again.
Yeah, absolutely. Good choice. This movie was my number 11. Just missed the list. And I went round and round and felt bad leaving it off, but I like my list, you know. So it is a great movie. Gina Davis and Tom Hanks are fantastic. Lori Petty, who plays younger sister Kat, is quite good in it, too. And everybody's good in it. And it does show us kind of the only look in a theatrical release of women's professional baseball during World War II, which took the place of the major leagues and became the sole source of baseball entertainment for a lot of the country. Very interesting story. Good movie. Good choice.
Thanks.
Let's go on. My number four is...
Yeah, what's your number four?
Major League, which you've talked about already. When you rank it as far as well-made Cadillac of movies and everything, no, this is not it, but it's just a great, fun time. It's loaded with characters, as you said. Wesley Snipes and Dennis Haysbert came into my universe in this movie. I really became in tune with them as actors. I think they're great. Margaret Whitten, I'd seen before on the Michael J. Fox movie, The Secret of My Success, and love her in this as the evil owner. James Gammon as Lou Brown, the manager. There's a lot of great supporting characters in this to go along with the stars. But this is one of those movies that Corbin Burnson, I'm sorry, does not convince me that he's a ball player. Chelsea Ross, the old pitcher, does not convince me that he's a ball player. There's a little struggle. And even Tom Berenger at times, they help cover it by saying he's at, you know, the end of his career. He's got the aching knees and everything. And that sure helps because other than that,
you're not incorrect. I always just chalk that up to the fact that they were Cleveland Indians, so they sucked.
But Charlie looks very believable. You know, he's gone to baseball academies. He knows how to pitch a baseball. Yeah. Wesley Snipes, Dennis Haysbert, believe them completely. It was just those other guys I mentioned. But fun movie. I will never not like it. That's my number four, Major League. Let's move on.
All right.
Three.
Number three. We're in our top three now. Number three for me, 1989 brought us what I think is a perfect blend of modern movie making and 1940s sensibilities. And that was the Phil Alden Robinson motion picture, The Field of Dreams.
Nice.
It is a baseball movie only in the sense that it uses baseball as a framework to tell another story, a story just the redemptive qualities of baseball, the simplicity of baseball, and how that can translate to a father-son relationship. It's a very plausible telling of a wholly unplausible premise, but at no point do we ever doubt Ray Kinsella. At no point do we ever doubt that this field is going to get built and something magical is going to happen. And we're okay with that. It doesn't take a bad step. It doesn't strike a false note. The cast was terrific. You know, again, starting with Kevin Costner and Amy Madigan, you know, Timothy Busfield, Ray Liotta, you know, and such wonderful character actors like James Earl Jones and Burt Lancaster, Moonlight Graham. Wonderful film. Again, comfort food. Anytime it's on, it stays on, and I watch it to the very end, which I could probably say about most of the movies on this list. But number three for me was Field of Dreams.
It's such an excellent movie. I just love it. I know and have worked with Steve Easton and Art LeFleur, who played two of the other Deadball players. They played Eddie Seacott and Chick Gandel. And they both say this is one of the best professional experiences they ever had in their life. They just loved it. The location was great. You just kind of felt the magic. It is a magical movie. Good choice.
And it comes across on screen.
Absolutely.
You know, this good experience they had. And even in your experience, my experience, you know, in the industry, it's never failed that if you have a good time on a show, it shows up on screen.
Yep. Absolutely.
It really does.
And it just
really does.
It comes through the lens at you. It's fantastic. My number three, and struggled. I think we probably have the same top three movies. It may just be in different orders, but my number three, could be number one. It could be number two. It could, whatever. It's Bull Durham, another 1988 film. 88 and 89 were good years for baseball movies.
Seriously.
Ron Shelton, director, writer, Kevin Costner again, as Crash Davis, one of my all time favorite character names, Crash Davis, the catcher. Susan Sarandon she's as much as Costner. She is the movie in this. She's the narrative voice. She's the heart and soul. She puts baseball in terms of metaphysics, religion, just all those things. And normally not the ways that you think about baseball. And that's the way she sees it. And it becomes poetry to her. Tim Robbins, fantastic. The thing I really like about this movie, though, is the basic story is a great look at the minor leagues. And we don't get to see that very often. I think it's a very realistic look at the minor leagues. They're in motels. They don't get to be at, you know, the Ritz-Carlton. They're traveling on buses. They don't get to be on airplanes. It's a hard life in the minors, and you see it. And here's Costner's character, Crash Davis, who's getting toward the end of his career, and he's actually going backwards. They brought him down a level to help this new young pitcher, played by Tim Robbins, as he's on his way up, hopefully on his way to the major leagues. So it's about their coexistence. But all the players are good. The comedy's fun. You get to see Max Patkin, the clown prince of baseball, for many, many years, so it's kind of cool to see him. I just love this movie. Could easily be my number one, Bull Durham.
I'll have a chance to talk about this movie a little bit later on as well, but just to call out Max Patkin, one of my favorite parts of his performance in the movie is they show him on stage in a ballpark, you know, cutting up as the clown prince. And then the next scene, they just show him in a bar having a drink with the other ball players off stage. So they show the two personas of Max, which I thought was really cool. They didn't just leave with that one thing.
Yeah, he's actually hanging with Annie Savoy, that's Susan Sarandon, and Crash Davis, and they're just kicking back. So they'd all known each other from all the times that he's played that ballpark or he's seen Crash at other ballparks. It's really cool. It's a good point.
It really is nice. It's a good portrayal. Good choice.
Thank you. Number two.
Two.
Number two. 1984. Again, the 80s were just like vintage years for baseball movies. The Natural. This is the perfect baseball fantasy movie. It's a redemption story. It is told at a very perfect, deliberate pace, just like a baseball game. It finds its own pace. As they say, baseball is the only game with no clock, no time limit. This movie felt like that as well. It meandered and unfolded at just the right pace. The Randy Newman soundtrack is iconic. You've heard it in every World Series coverage or any salute to a retiring player. It is an iconic soundtrack. It's one of my favorites, as is Randy Newman. But all of these elements come together to tell just this wonderful allegorical story. And as we've talked about the cast, you know, you talk about Redford and Glenn Close and you go, oh, yeah, that's right. Wilford Brimley was in it. And Richard Farnsworth. And wait, wasn't Barbara Hershey in it? And wait, Robert Duvall was the reporter. And wait, wasn't Darren McGavin? I mean, you want to talk about a deep bench, you know, for a baseball team. This movie had a deep, perfect bench. Nobody was an all-star except maybe Redford. Glenn Close was coming up at the time. Everybody else just filled their roles perfectly and created the perfect baseball fantasy movie. I love The Natural. It's another one that, again, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm just coming home. I flip on the TV for 5 seconds and the beginning of that movie is on. Doesn't matter. I'm watching it.
Great, great choice. Glenn Close, I think, had only really done The Big Chill up to that point, and some Broadway. So yeah,
maybe The World According to Garp.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Absolutely. She did. And, that soundtrack is second to none as far as sports films for me. It's amazing. Good, good choice. My number two is something you just mentioned, Field of Dreams. And as you said, it is a magical movie, and they want it to be magical and about magic and suspend your disbelief, but they do it. And it's done very, very well. And it's done with poetry. And it's a great performance by Ray Liotta, who's not the usual wise guy type of character that he plays. He's got a lot of poetry to his speech and his thoughtfulness, and there's a mystique about him and his character of Shoeless Joe Jackson. And then the great James Earl Jones, who goes along the ride and gets kind of abducted by Ray Kinsella on this journey, and he buys into it, and he's the author Terrence Mann, and he's going to write about it. And the speech that he gives of people will come, Ray, they'll come from, you know, that's just gives me goosebumps every time I hear him say it in that voice. It's amazing stuff. It's, once again, could have been my number one. Strong, strong movie. Will never not be a favorite movie, period, of mine. So that was our top almost 10, leaving number one. Just to recap real quick for our number 10, Kirk had Moneyball. I had For Love of the Game, the first Kevin Costner movie of our list. His number 9, he had The Jackie Robinson Story. I had 42. For choice number 8, we both had The Rookie, the Dennis Quaid movie. For number 7, he had Major League, and as an asterisk, Major League 2, cheater.
Breaking the rules already.
I stayed clean as a very, very good American and went with the classic, The Pride of the Yankees. On number 6, Kirk had another comedy classic, The Bad News Bears. I went with the period piece, 8 Men Out. Number 5, Kirk had Pride of the Yankees, the silver screen classic, and I went with The Bad News Bears. Number 4, Kirk had A League of Their Own. I had Major League. Number 3, Kirk went with Field of Dreams. I had Bull Durham. On choice number 2, Kirk went with the Redford classic, The Natural, and I went with Field of Dreams. And that brings us to dun dun dun.
One.
Number one. Now, putting this list together was tough. You know, both Steve and I have mentioned a couple of movies that missed for us. For me, it was 8 Men Out. Also Bang the Drum Slowly, and The Sandlot. We're all kind of bubbling under. And you know, you get back to that conundrum of, okay, if I put one of those on, which one do I take off? And so that's why it was so hard to put this list together. So those are the ones that just missed. But for my number one, it's a movie that Steve's already talked about. And if The Natural was the perfect baseball fantasy, Bull Durham is the perfect baseball reality. Bull Durham is nothing but baseball. It's Americana. It's romance. It's well-played baseball. It is the comedy that can stem from just life in the major leagues. Atmosphere drips from every scene in this movie, the locations, the people, the situations. You feel like you're in that small town of Durham. You feel like you're on the bus headed to an away game. You feel like you're in that bar that the ball players can drop into. Terrific movie, wonderful supporting cast as well. We always forget about Robert Wool, who played one of the coaches on the Durham Bulls pitching staff, who then went on to work with Ron Shelton again in the movie Cobb,
right,
with Tommy Lee Jones. Another baseball movie that kind of bubbled under my list as well. Bull Durham to me is, again, faith versus science. It's the objective of a Kevin Costner and the subjective of a Susan Sarandon, and how opposites can possibly attract. And it's just a well-told story that doesn't have a happy ending, but it has a satisfying ending.
Right. Good choice. I've already talked about it. Love it. Great baseball, great humor, tons of fun. And Rose goes in the front, big guy.
Yes, it does.
My number one is obviously something you've already talked about. It is the best all-around baseball movie, even though it is literally a myth. It is The Natural with Robert Redford, as we talked about. It's stupendous. It just sucks you along for the ride with that great soundtrack, the great cast, the wonderful art direction, the wonderful cinematography, the old timey uniforms, guys like Michael Madsen, who plays Bump Bailey, Kim Basinger, Barbara Hershey, Joe Don Baker as the Whammer. It's one of my favorite scenes where they're on their way and they're at the carnival, and it's Roy Hobbs and his old agent. And they're there, and there's the Whammer, who's supposed to be Babe Ruth. And they get into a challenge of throwing three balls. And if he gets three strikes, Roy Hobbs wins. If he misses or the Whammer crushes the ball, which he's anticipating on doing, he wins. And it's great. And Roy Hobbs, of course, strikes him out. But it's shot so well and so amazing. And it just builds the legend that is Roy Hobbs. The scene in the beginning where the lightning strikes the tree when he's a little boy, and he sees that, and he sees the wood glow, and that's the wood he uses to make his bat called Wonder Boy. It's just all this mystique that's gets built into the legend of Roy Hobbs, and it's done so well and so seamlessly. And yes, it is a myth, you know, buy into that, and it sucks you along into that ride, then it's great. So when Glenn Close stands up in the crowd, and he thinks he sees her, but he's not sure because of the sun. But then he kind of regains his ability and crushes a home run. I totally buy into it. I've had no problem with it. I love that. Give me more. So that was my number one, The Natural.
Well, it's funny. You brought up a couple more names. I said this movie had a deep bench. And I completely left off Kim Basinger or Joe Don Baker, Michael Madsen. Yeah. Again, this had a great cast.
Oh, it is perfect. It is. It's just all the way through. There's nothing that's weak about this movie. It's strong, as is Field of Dreams, as is Bull Durham. All three of these movies in our top three are, to me, the quintessential baseball films.
So you've got The Natural at number one. I've got Bull Durham at number one. We're going to have a guest join us in just a couple of minutes. It'll be very interesting to see which one he picks as his number one. One of those two or something new.
We're going to take a little bit of a break here, but when we come back, you will meet our very special guest this week, Matt Vasgersian, the voice of ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball and host of Major League Baseball Network. And he will have a very interesting take, I'm sure, on his own top 10 list for best baseball movies. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and as promised, we have our special guest. He's announced on the NFL on Fox. He's done five Olympics for NBC. As we told you, he's the host of MLB Network and, of course, the voice of ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball. He's the one, the only, the incomparable, Matt Vasgersian.
Hello.
Gentlemen, it's good to be with you guys, man. We go back a little bit, so it's great to be with you guys.
Yes, as part of the description of the show, we talk about how we met as tour guides at a major movie studio, you know, back in the 80s. So yeah, we do go back.
There is that connection. And yeah, you were the first name that came to mind. And quickly, when we decided to do the podcast, we said, let's do something baseball and let's call V, because you're the perfect first guest for our inaugural episode. So we appreciate you being here.
Well, our days together as tour guides back on the Hal Roach Studios lot, really, I look back at that so fondly.
Exactly. A lot of good times. My 14th college experience.
So as Steve said, Matt, you know, you're the first person that came to mind when we thought about baseball movies being the first topic. You know, wanted to have you on as somebody who's known you for, you know, now 30 years. It has been a pleasure to watch you live out your dream. You always wanted to do this when we first met you, and you have become so accomplished in your chosen field. Steve listed a few of the things that you've done. What is your favorite? What are the things we don't know that you've done?
Are you a baseball fan? Do you watch movies, TV, or are you curious about the lives of professional baseball players or people in the entertainment industry? Then Peanuts, Popcorn, and Cracker Jacks is the podcast for you. Hosted by Jeff Santo, a writer-director and son of a Hall of Fame Chicago Cubs baseball player, This podcast comes out every other Thursday with extraordinary guest interviews and surprise crackerjack guests. It's fun, it's emotional. It's peanuts, popcorn, and crackerjacks.
You know, there's a lot of things that I've done that I enjoyed. I don't know that I'm going to, you know, win any achievement awards for being the host of the inaugural Rock, Paper, Scissors Championship with Tom Arnold, but it was fun. I really love being involved in MLB The Show, the Sony PlayStation game, which has grown up so wonderfully, and the people that produce and write and code that game are so good at what they do and so smart. To tell people that you're proud of being associated with a video game might sound a little odd, but it's so good. And the thing gets so much doggone run. And when you have your friends tell you, hey, I can't walk into my house without hearing your voice coming out of the basement, it's horrifying, yet something of a compliment at the same time. So I'm pretty proud of that kind of thing. And, you know, anything we can do as guys in our 50s to be relatable to anybody that's a millennial or younger, we have to embrace at this stage of the game.
Over the years, have you had the chance to contribute more and more and more to the game? I mean, I'm sure when you first came in, hired gun, but as you moved into it, were you able to contribute content or work with them?
Yeah, actually, you know, they've kind of indulged in me doing my announcer impressions. There are a few guys whose home run calls are pretty easy to imitate, and I've pushed those in. We did this kind of hidden Howard Stern code box, if you will, where every once in a while, certain gameplay would trigger one of Howard Stern's drops or kind of a little shout out to somebody on his staff or one of the Whack Pack guys. And that was met with really friendly ears because a lot of us have the same sensibilities over there that the guys that write the game. But, you know, it's about 40 or so hours of new recording every year. So the goal is always make it sound as real as possible. And without denigrating any other video games, you know, if you play an early version of Madden NFL, they only had John and Al Michaels in the studio for a few hours every year. And so you got a lot of welcome to today's game between the Packers and the Raiders. You know, it was like that kind of yep. Voice of Tron type stuff. They make it sound and look as authentic as they can, given it's still a video game. And I'm really proud of being involved with that.
Yeah, and you're a great choice for it, too. I've read over different reviews, having a teenage son who's constantly in the market for new video games. So you read things, you research them and whatever. And on message boards for the show, there's a lot of people who love the fact that you are the voice of that, and they think it does make the game better also. So you are a popular choice, my friend.
Well, send that to the guys that make the video game. The only stuff I ever hear about my involvement in anything is, the social media is made to vent. You never hear nice stuff about yourself. That's why I kind of just walk through the world with blinders on. I don't want to see anything good, bad, or indifferent.
Exactly. How did you first become a baseball fan? Do you remember that moment? And since I know you've been a baseball fan since you were little, is it hard now to separate the fan from the announcer?
That's a good question. Those of us that work in baseball that love it, and that's, I would hope to think that it's most of us, are only here because you fell in love with one particular brand of it. And for me, as a kid that grew up in the San Francisco, Oakland, East Bay in the early 70s, the only thing I knew was that the Oakland A's go to and win the World Series every year. So that first year that they did not, which was 1975, that was when I knew that it mattered to me, because it was the first time I uttered an F-bomb in front of my Boston born and raised father, and the Red Sox, being the team that ended the A season that year unceremoniously, drew the wrath of my ire and limited cursing vocabulary. My dad realized how upset I was, dispatched me to my room, and then explained to me the following morning why that wasn't a very good choice. But I knew that that's when it mattered to me. As far as being a fan and still working in baseball, there was a time not long ago where that was frowned upon, where you couldn't root, you couldn't be public with who your favorite team is.
Right.
But the world has changed, and I think fans like transparency. My biggest fear / dream is to call a World Series that involves the Oakland A's. because there's so much public record out there as to me being an A's fan and who we all like as announcers now, it'd be pretty hard to go through and scrub that off the interwebs that, you know, I'm an A's fan. And in fact, I did do an A's postseason game a few years ago on MLB Network. It was an A's Tigers division series game. And I was so petrified of coming off as an A's fan or homer that I went too far the other way. And the feedback that our producers and our people got was, it was stuff like, this guy must be from Detroit. I can't believe how much he's rooting for the Tigers. He doesn't know anything about the A's. And because I overplayed my hand in the other direction, because I was so afraid of being outed as a partisan on the air. But yeah, I think it's okay to root a little bit. And look, man, that's why we're in it, because it matters to us. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
That makes total sense to me. I don't know if I could separate the fan. And that's what baseball is all about. It's supposed to bring those emotions that are hard to detach from your skeletal being, and that it's so deep rooted. Well, that's great. You're here because you work in the profession of baseball. You're here because you are such a deep-seated fan. And so let's get into here what your top 10 list is for the best baseball movies of all time.
Let's see. As we said in our teaser, we're going to be weighed against the insight of a professional announcer versus the two dopes that host this thing.
Yeah, but I happen to know that the two dopes here are cinephiles and very well versed in not only film, but baseball. So we've hit the sweet spot here. I will tell you what you're not going to hear on my list. Can I go through those quickly? Because I'm guessing that one, if not all, appear on yours.
Yeah.
All right.
Please.
Cobb just didn't make the cut, despite how brilliant Tommy Lee Jones was.
Yeah, me neither.
Okay. Mr. Baseball, charming as it may have been, did not make the cut.
And we did get one unofficial vote for that on the listeners poll.
The very moment that the Danny Glover character approached the Tony Danza character on the mound and referred to pitcher X as being on the IR, it was when I scrubbed Angels in the Outfield from the permanent record. Get the vernacular right, Hollywood screenwriter person. And you also
stop right here and you're fine.
Here's the controversial one, because I know, Trutner, this is on your list. Moneyball does not make the list of Matty Vasgersian.
Me neither.
Because you cannot tell the story accurately without mention of Hudson, Mulder, and Zito, period.
But were Hudson, Mulder, and Zito the story, or was it the birth of analytics? I looked at it as faith versus science, and it was the beginning of that argument in baseball. The objective versus the subjective. That, to me, was the story.
I leave it to you to have a better response to what I thought was pretty good there.
No, don't.
Okay, you're right.
Don't
you're
give right. him that. He's wrong.
No, it was good. It was a good argument. It was well stated.
What else did not make the cut? Or is that the list?
As far as the popular stuff, For the Love of the Game did not make the list. Scully couldn't save it for me, as much as he was, you know, push the setting sun back up into the sky. Like, that stuff was so good. Didn't make the list. But I can get to, you want me to get to number 10? Should we start with number 10?
Yep.
All right. I know you guys have Bull Durham ranked higher than I do, but Bull Durham is number 10 for me. Not because I didn't like it, but because there are 9 baseball films I like more. If we were doing this 15 or 20 years ago, it would have been much higher. But there's like a Hollywoodness in the Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins narrative that I just thought was hokey now looking back at it, and it settles it in at number 10 for me.
Very good.
Interesting. Interesting. Yes, I had it at, let me see, number 1.
I knew you'd have it higher. I just didn't. Number 1, Trout. Okay.
Number 1. Fair.
I've already run afoul of the popular opinion here.
Not
at all. Populist.
So here are the 9 baseball movies that I right now like more than Bull Durham. The Scout.
Oh.
Because anything with Albert Brooks, I'm just full disclosure, it's going to be great. And the first 50 minutes of that movie were so perfect. It fell off the cliff, and the ending was blech. But when he told that family You know, Mickey Mantle's sister was a nun. Her name was also Mickey. It was so perfectly Albert Brooks. And again, the first 45 minutes, I was so charmed by it. Despite how bad the subsequent 45 minutes may have been, it's number 9 for me.
That one is so in your wheelhouse. That does not surprise me. That's a good choice.
Number 8, moving forward here. I didn't think this movie got enough run. It got some run, but Mr. 3000, starring Bernie Mac as the hard-to-love superstar Stan Ross, who retires thinking he'd been into the Hall of Fame with 3,000 hits, only to find that a subsequent poring over the stats found that he was 3 hits shy. He has to come back. He's out of shape. Bernie Mac was brilliant. It was funny. It has a Milwaukee flavor to it, which right there, I'm fond of it. So Mr. 3000's number 8 for me.
Nice.
Did that make your list at all?
Not mine.
I considered it.
Okay.
It was in my almost maids.
Number 7. And I know you guys have this one higher than I do too, but The Natural, the Randy Newman score might have pushed it to number 2 if I'd let music be that big of an influence, because it's so good. But it also strikes me, because I know you guys are also fans of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, that for both Paul Newman and Robert Redford, their best films, for me, my favorite films of theirs, were sports movies, because there's no better sports movie than Slapshot. And The Natural was great. So I've got it at number 7.
Yeah, I had The Natural at number 2, and one of the reasons was the Randy Newman score. Iconic.
Yeah, and that was my number 1, and yes, we are so easily susceptible to falling in for a good score.
Yes. Yeah, it's true, but it's fair. It's good to do. Number 6 for me. Is that where we are, number 6?
Yep.
This was a tough one to place because I love the movie. I got 42 at number 6 because, right, we all thought we knew the story, all of us that are baseball fans. Yet the way it was executed, the action scenes, and that's one of my biggest problems with baseball and sports movies in general, the action scenes are so hokey. And I know Naked Gun wasn't supposed to be an accurate portrayal of baseball, but you could just see the second unit director in front of the stage of extras going, okay, guys, we're at a baseball game. Cheer really loudly and get up and wave your pennants and stuff. That's not how we watch sports, dude. You've never been to a game, have you? Go back to Hollywood. But the sports stuff, the baseball accuracy was great. I mean, Chadwick Boseman, great. Of course, Harrison Ford, great. So I got 42 at number 6 just because it was so compelling.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Number 5.
Yeah, going into your top 5. Here we
go. Top 5 here. And this got really hard. I took this seriously here. And these are my favorites. This is not supposed to be some Roger Ebert list, right? Number 5 for me, and this is purely a personal thing, I saw Field of Dreams once. And I saw it at our Universal Cine Odeon when it came out, when it was pink, and before all the other stuff was built around it. And in 1989, that movie was so personally moving to me. It validated my decision to pursue my dreams and become a minor league baseball play-by-play guy. I didn't know if it was going to last one summer or a lifetime, but I have not watched that movie on purpose since, because that experience for me will never be replicated in the theater, having just graduated from college, a little rudderless, a little, wow, what's the world going to have in store? And I see this unbelievable film. So I'm not sure if it still holds up today, to be honest, because I haven't seen it since that first day, but I've got it at number 5. Right.
That's a great story, V.
Yeah, very much. Great choice. Good movie.
Did you guys have it higher?
Yeah,
yeah, we both had it in our top 3. Yeah, I had mine at 2.
Fair. Number 4 for me, and I somehow Major League has withstood the test of time. And, the characters were right out of central casting, admittedly, but they were the kind of pervasive characters that existed in Major League Baseball in the late 1980s. Like Joe Boo as the enigmatic slugger from an unidentified non-English speaking country who comes over to the States and does the witchcraft. The guy that played the manager, was that Wilford Brimley that played the manager?
No, he was in The Natural. That was James Gammon, who played Lou Brown.
He was perfect. Every time we win, I take off a piece. Like, everything about that movie still plays as shticky in 80s as it might have come off. And when you can find inspiration in the real true life story of Mitch Williams, and then make a lot of money on it. Salud.
I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, I had Major League a little bit lower, but one of the things I said about it was it walked right up to the line of being cartoony, but never crossed it. And these characters just kind of leapt out at you. And I actually kind of cheated. I said Major League and Major League 2 were basically the same film, so they went on the same line.
I mean, should it be lower than things like 42? Absolutely. It's not nearly as significant. It's not nearly as educational and relevant. But there's something so charming about it, even though Corbin Burnson looked like a guy that's never had a bat or glove in his hand ever.
Thank you.
Terrible. Like, dude, can you play catch without getting knocked out? We thought you were kind of a you know, athletic guy until that film.
Yeah, I suspect there was a few scenes shot with him that never made the final cut.
Uecker saved it, however.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So number three for me, and you guys may take exception to this because it was presented as a series, but John Turturro as Billy Martin in The Bronx is Burning was the greatest singular portrayal of a baseball figure that we knew everything about, including his speech patterns, his cadence, his hot button temper. Like, that performance to me was unbelievable. It was uncanny how good he was at Billy Martin. And Billy Martin was a complicated dude, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I never met him. I never spoke to him personally, but the stories are endless from people that I know well, that knew him well, that worked for him. And we saw enough of Billy on tape, on the news, on TV, to know who he was, at least from an acting standpoint. Turturro was great. So I get it was a docu-series kind of thing, but I got that Bronx is Burning at number three.
I think that might be the most interesting choice we've had today. That's very cool.
Judges? The judges agree. You're good.
Oh, I made it. Okay. So the top two. Man, this was not hard. I'm going to tell you that this part of it was not difficult at all, because Bingo Long and the Traveling All-Stars is so underrated.
Yes.
And so few people who are baseball fans or sports fans have ever heard of this movie. I mean, James Earl Jones, Billy Dee Williams, and Richard Pryor, I'm in. Okay?
Yeah.
You already got me sucked in there. And then when you learn that it's loosely based on real people, real events, and a real feel culturally at the time, you learn from it. And it makes you want to go to the history books and peel open some chapters about segregated America, about Negro League baseball. It makes you want to go to Kansas City and go to the Negro League Museum and Hall of Fame that's run by our friend Bob Kendrick at MLB Network, who's such a great ambassador for baseball. It was also fun. So it balanced out the real harshness of the era with a likability factor because of the cast. Here's number one. Easy for me, slam dunk, Bad News Bears. And I know it's on your list too, guys, but so much more than just a comedy, funny, ha-ha. It absolutely was not a kid's movie. I mean, the tension at that final scene with the late Vic Morrow and the courtship of Eddie's father kid that played his son.
Brandon Cruz.
Name it. God, you're good, Hafer. You know all these people's names.
We talked about him earlier.
but it's a real movie. Like, it was real, man. And it was funny. And Engelberg's up next. He's murdering the ball. Lean into it, Rudy, and all the funny lines. Hey, let's get one out there. And who among us? Because when that movie came out, I was 9 years old. So that was super authentic. That's what Little League Baseball looked like in the mid 70s, right? Everything about it. And who among us didn't fall in love with Tabitha? Was her name Tabitha? What was the character's name? Amanda.
Amanda, yeah.
Amanda. You know, it's funny. We both had that movie on our list. And one of the questions that surrounds it is, could you make that movie today?
To name a kind of frumpy character after an autoimmune disease, as they did lupus. They named a guy lupus. Right there, you don't get past the second or third draft.
Yeah.
Timmy Lupus.
Jimmy Lupus. That's it. That's my top 10.
That's your top 10. Great list. I do have one question.
Okay.
No Pride of the Yankees?
Tough. No Pride of the Yankees. No Bang the Drum Slowly. I mean, Pride of the Yankees is Gary Cooper's great. That's who we, I mean, we all, that's who I thought Lou Gehrig was. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just kind of associated it with that portrayal. I didn't have any of the Babe Ruth movies, not Bendix, not Goodman, none of those. Yeah. I just don't think any of them were top 10.
Yeah.
Did you have Pride of the Yankees in there, Kirk?
I did. We both
did. A couple of other movies I wanted to give shouts out to before we move along here is some old movies I think people should check out. The Stratton Story, which I definitely consider with Jimmy Stewart and June Allison and Frank Morgan, who was the wizard from The Wizard of Oz. And then a little known movie, which is very near and dear to my heart. It's called Pastime. It was made in 1990 and stars William Russ, who I worked with on Boy Meets World. He was the dad on Boy Meets World. He's done a lot of things, but he and Glenn Plummer are the stars, and it's another minor league movie. It's a good movie. It's definitely worth a look to everybody.
It just goes to show there are no wrong answers in any of this. Any of these films could have made it, honestly.
You would think so, and I think ultimately you're right. There are no wrong answers, but that brings us to our listeners poll this week. And for the listeners poll, since it is our first week and people are just learning our website, there are not many answers, period. I'm not saying right or wrong. There just aren't many. We had a total of 6 votes or 6 voters who did the top 10 list this first week. It will get better. Tied for first. There's a lot of ties in this. We had Bull Durham, Field of Dreams, A League of Their Own, Major League, and The Natural. They all tied for number spots 1 through 5. 6 and 7, it was Moneyball and 42. Then we had Bad News Bears and The Sandlot. Then we had tied for 10th/11th, 8 Men Out and The Rookie.
Did any of those respondents mistake the Stratton Story for Star 80, as I did?
Wow. Didn't even consider that, but you know what? Oh. We might have had that problem there.
We're going to have to redo this entire podcast. I'm going to re-rank everything.
Hilarious. So we thank you for coming on, Matt. What is next?
Next is Hot Stove on MLB Network mornings, weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific, 6 a.m. Eastern. And Harold Reynolds and I kind of carve through the off season in a weird year where free agents, you know, might be a little disappointed for reasons that are pretty obvious. It's going to be pretty interesting stuff in the off season. We also try to have some fun too. Harold is a great friend and an easy guy to work with. So when he stops paying attention, which is frequently, he doesn't mind us taking shots at him, and it makes for a pretty good time.
Where can people find you on social media if they want to follow Matt Vaskirjan?
I have an Instagram account. It's not very robust, but I try to be interesting on there when I do post. It's at Matt Vaskirjan, real creative handle. people can find me. And and be kind. That's all I ask on social media, because it's prevented me from putting my toe any deeper into the water. It could be a mean-spirited place, social media. But I just try to have fun on there.
Yeah, it's not for the faint of heart, but it can definitely be a very good thing. Well, Kirk and I both want to thank you again for being the first guest on the very first episode of Populist, and we do hope to have you back. And thanks for contributing to the show.
Thanks for doing this, V. We really appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah, guys.
All right, Matt. All thanks, right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Man, it is always good to catch up with Matty V. I love talking baseball with him, talking baseball movies with him. I mean, you and he and I go back 30 years, and to have him on for the first guest list, that was awesome.
There is nobody better we could have had. It got us off on a great start. Hope you listeners at home enjoyed him as much as we enjoyed having you here and interviewing him and talking baseball movies with him. What's next?
Next up on Populist, we are going to explore the top 10 list of the best rock and roll bands of all time, a subject that has been hotly debated over coffee tables and bar stools and rain delays for years. Steve and I are going to take it on, and we will have a very special guest on the next guest list as well.
That's right. And you can find out who that special guest is by going to our website at populistpodcast.net. You can find out about our guest. You can also find the poll with all the rock band choices there for you, and you can vote. So your voices will be heard on our next episode when we read the listeners list. Find us on any place that carries a good podcast, like Apple Podcasts,
Spotify,
Google Podcasts,
Stitcher,
Overcast,
Amazon Podcasts,
Deezer,
or wherever you download your podcast.
We're part of the Buzzsprout community as well, and we're a product of Vintage Year Productions. Thanks for listening on our first episode. We hope to see you soon. We had a lot of fun. We'll see you next time.
Go vote. Bye.
Bye-bye.